Sarah Simic with us, air traffic controller. You're from Grand Forks Airport, right?
Yes, Grand Forks International.
Yeah. Okay, and you're going by the nickname of JT. We're going to talk about that a little bit later on to get that figured out. But how long have you been in air traffic control now?
Actually, next week it will be 18 years with the FAA, and then I did about a year prior to that at a contract facility.
Really?
So quite a while.
So what do you do contract?
I did air traffic. So I went to a school. It was kind of, it was very similar to what the enhanced CTI school is here.
Okay.
For air traffic, and it's not around anymore. But it was in New Braunfels, Texas, and so we flew first, and then we did ground school, and we worked in a contract facility that was paid for by the city of it was paid for by the city of New Braunfels.
Okay.
And yeah, it was just a cool overall experience. The FAA oversaw it, and they came in and they tested us, and we earned our CTO, which is the certificate to work air traffic in a tower, and we joined the FAA that way.
So now you're also part of the union,
mm-hmm.
and that's called the National
Air Traffic Controllers Association.
Okay, and are you local, or like what's your role there?
So locally, I'm the facility representative for GFK, Grand Forks NACA. Regionally, I'm the communications representative for the Great Lakes region, which is every facility between Bismarck and Cleveland, Ohio. So I run communications, emails, social media, and stuff like that to try to get communication to our people.
Okay.
And then I'm the vice chair for the National Communications Committee.
You're busy.
A little bit.
That's good, though. It makes your days go quick, I bet.
I think it's obvious, though. I like outreach stuff. I like passing communication and talking about the work that we do, and just getting as much information as we can out there.
So you started in Texas, you said, is that correct?
Yes.
And then where else have you been? You haven't been in Grand Forks your whole
career. I started in New Braunfels as a contract facility, and then I went to Dayboy and Hooks, which is about 7 miles west of Intercontinental Airport in Houston.
Okay.
It's a smaller tower, similar to the flight schools and stuff we have here, just a smaller flight schools. And then I went to Evansville, Indiana, which is a tower Tracon. And then I went to Dayton, Ohio, and then transferred here to Grand Forks.
Is it really as busy as they say? I mean, I know it's busy, obviously,
yes.
But comparatively speaking to other airports, is it?
Yes, it has its moments. Obviously, on blizzard days, it's nothing.
Yeah.
but when it is busy, it does get very, very busy. And honestly, there is nothing that I could do in the tower here without the team around. It is a team sport.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have anywhere from 5 to 7 controllers in a very confined space. And we all have to just rely on each other to get through all of the traffic. And it goes in waves as well, right? Student pilots, every semester we start over.
Yeah.
We get brand new pilots again. So having those extra set of eyes to watch and make sure everybody's going the right direction and following the right traffic and just staying separate is really the goal.
It's a cozy tower. You got a lot of people up in that
yes.
little space, don't you?
Yes.
You got to trust that they're doing their job and that you can get along with them, too.
Yes. And that is kind of the benefit of we've been short-staffed, so we spend a lot of time together.
Mm-hmm.
So we are pretty close. I see we're not friends because we're paid to hang out together, but it's as close as you can get.
Sure.
We all know each other's families. We know kids, spouses, and everything. We share meals. We do all those things together because we spend, most of us, 60 hours a week in that tower right now.
Wow. Oh, man. You know, we were talking on the way in that you actually teach a class. Is that part of, like, outreach?
Yeah, actually, I was invited to come speak to
or
the...
Or speak at a class, I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's okay. To speak with the high school aviation class at the Career Impact Academy here in Grand Forks, which is really cool. It's run by Leslie Martin, is one of the teachers, and she teaches at UND as well. So being able to kind of go in there and talk about it, try to get people interested in air traffic, the more people get interested, the more maybe they join the agency and we can... I'm hoping to retire in about 5 to 6 years, so I need to get more people in the agency before that
sure.
happens.
Sure. Yeah. Is it FAST team?
Yes, FAA safety teams.
Okay.
FAST team.
And you're on that.
Yes. I'm one of the North Dakota representatives, along with my supervisor, Jesse Roberts. He's the other controller representative. And then there's a few pilot representatives at UND as well.
Okay.
And we do outreach. We put on seminars mostly for GA non-UND pilots at the airport. At AvFlight lets us host them there, and it's nice. We can do cookies and drinks, like coffee and stuff like that, and snacks, and just really talk about how to fly in and out of Grand Forks as not a UND student.
Sure.
Because that really can impact the experience you have based on how much you plan on going to an airport.
You know, I've never even thought about that. As a, you know, UND pilot, mm-hmm. I've never thought about what it's like for outsiders to come in. It's not just come in down a base final sometimes. There's a lot mm-hmm. to it. So it's good that you have that outreach that you're...
And we do get a lot of people that don't really know. I mean, Grand Forks, North Dakota is in the middle of nowhere. Mm-hmm. There isn't a lot around us. So, like... We have a lot of pilots that come in and think, oh, this isn't easy. I could just go on a trip here and go get a cheeseburger and then leave, you know, and no.
It doesn't work like that.
Surprise.
Yeah. So you live in Grand Forks. Mm-hmm. You have your spouse is in mm-hmm. aviation also. Is that correct?
My husband actually works dispatch now for UND. His 1 year at dispatch was 2 days ago.
Really?
So,
And kids?
Two kids, a senior and a junior at Central High School.
Okay.
And, I don't think either one of them are going to go aviation, but I'm trying.
You never know. You never know. Okay, so we talked earlier, your nickname is JT.
Mm-hmm.
Your initials are SS, so it's not even close.
No.
So where does JT come from?
So every controller picks their initials when they join a facility, and it has to be initials that are not already taken. When I joined the FAA, my father was a controller, and my maiden name started with a T. That's where the T comes from.
Okay.
But my father's name was Sam, and he was a controller, so his initials were ST. And I thought, yeah, I don't want to have the same initials as my dad. He was in my overlying facility as well, so we had to coordinate.
Oh, sure.
So I was like, yeah, no, I don't want to do that. So I chose my middle initial, which is J.
Okay.
And then I've been fortunate every facility I've been to since then has not had JT already taken. So
every facility you go to, you'd have to get new initials then, if
they're taken.
If they're taken.
Yes.
Really? I did not know that. So... if they've been used previously, you can use them.
Yes.
Okay. Oh, that's really interesting.
And in bigger facilities like en route centers and stuff, they will run out of initials. So sometimes they'll have three instead of two.
Okay. That's amazing. What is it like? You know, you talked a little bit about it, about being up in the tower with 5 to 7 people. But what is it like on a busy, busy day with solos all over the place? Mm-hmm. What is it like?
It is... absolutely controlled chaos. It is a blast. And I mean, it's stressful in the moment, right? But it really gets your adrenaline rushing. That's why we're all here. Controllers move to Grand Forks to work traffic.
Mm-hmm.
We all know, for the most part, what we're getting into. We have a few that didn't, like didn't fly here. But they all knew coming here that there was going to be traffic. So it really is just, it's fun. It is stressful. Again, you have to have that team up there with you. I couldn't imagine trying to do it all by yourself.
Yeah.
Or even having that mentality of, like, I have to do all this and I can't rely on anybody else. If the person behind me isn't there, then it just falls apart.
Wow.
But otherwise, every FAA facility, or every air traffic facility for that matter, it always shocks me how quiet it is.
Yeah.
With everybody in the room is talking, and it is still so quiet.
Wow. So if you were to leave here and go to another smaller, but less traffic airport, mm-hmm. would it be boring? And I shouldn't say boring, but would it be, the days would seem longer? I'm sure they seem so short here when you are so busy all the time.
Yes and no. I do think it would be longer. I mean, when I worked at Dayton started to lose a lot of their air carriers as I was there at the end. They used to have Emory, and they lost that. So it really started to slow down towards my end of my time there. And it was rough. It did go kind of slow.
Yeah.
But the passion is in the traffic.
Mm-hmm.
And I think at the end of my career, maybe it wouldn't be... it wouldn't be horrible, but I just love it so much that I don't know that I could.
It's got to be satisfying, though, on a busy day like that when you got everything sequenced perfect and it goes to plan,
mm-hmm.
you know? I mean, there's got to be a satisfaction to that.
And then the wind comes in and just ruins our day.
It's time to switch runways.
Yes.
What is one of your best memories from Grand Forks?
It's a really hard question just because it does start to kind of flow all together.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it's probably not even an air traffic-y moment so much as we get amazing views in the tower.
Oh, sure.
Amazing sunrises, sunsets. That's probably a big perk of the job, right? I mean, everything's windows. But it wasn't until COVID that we really actually watched them. When the traffic slowed down just a little bit and you start to actually notice things like that and kind of take in the time. And so since then, it's kind of been that situation of like, instead of trying to look around the sunrise or sunset to see the traffic and like, oh, this is in my way and it's frustrating. It's like, it's super awesome to be able to see this and enjoy this and be able to move around and have these experiences and everything. And it's just such a beautiful view.
It's neat just to take 10 seconds and just appreciate it, I bet. What is, you know, if you got some kids that are in high school right now thinking about the career, what is one quality of a good air traffic controller that you can instill on them that's, you know, if you're thinking about this, you really need to be this?
One of the biggest things I would think would be you would need to be able to take criticism.
Sure.
And I go back and forth between, it's not necessarily criticism as much as critiques. There are no feelings in air traffic. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to spare someone's feelings, at the expense of a pilot's safety. So, we do our best to tell people when they're doing great things, when they're doing good things, but we do have to step in when they're doing something wrong. If I'm doing something wrong, somebody's going to step in that's behind me and fix it. It's just how it works. So there really just is a level of thick skin you have to have that's like, this isn't personal, but it's much easier to sometimes see stuff from behind you. It's similar to backseat driving. You know, you see a broader picture. So we do on a daily basis, even fully certified, we take criticism, critiques all the time. We're constantly striving to make it safer and better. But you have to have that mentality that this isn't a job where you're going to go in and you're going to learn it and be perfect. You're not going to get to that level of perfection to where you're going to ever stop learning or start trying new things or start doing new things. There's procedures that we've put into place last semester. And how long have we been working with UND?
Yeah.
We're constantly changing procedures on that level. So it is great to be able to have those changes and to have that flexibility, but it does take a certain amount of going into it knowing that, hey, I'm not going in there to master this and then be done and then I'm done.
Yeah.
And you do have to have patience. My job is to separate airplanes, but it's actually to provide a service. For us here, we're providing a service to students. We do everything we can to try to get everybody as successful as possible. But that's not always everything for everybody, every request. But that is our job, and we take it very seriously.
You know, I've heard some of the JFK controllers, they'll chirp at pilots once in a while. Mm-hmm. Have you ever had to chirp at a pilot or been chirped at by a pilot?
I'm very fortunate that with all the outreach I do, they recognize me pretty well.
Really?
Unfortunately, there actually are 5 female controllers at Grand Forks, and so they think we're all... The radio does change our voices just enough to where we sound the same.
Yeah.
But I've come to realize in my many years doing this that when you have that respect and you treat people like with that respect and treat them well, they will work with you. It really is apparent to me at this point that it's a team effort. It is me and a pilot working together to get that pilot through training. It isn't me telling the pilot what to do so they can get out of my way.
Yeah.
And going at it from that effort it does help a lot. But we all have bad days. We're all people. As you said, I have teenagers at home. Sometimes it's not even a work issue. And sometimes we just really do need people to answer quicker.
Yeah.
And respond quickly.
Well, and you know, in a training environment, you could really bust somebody's bubble, you know, and they feel like they're doing something right, they do something wrong, and if someone comes on them real hard, they might just go, I'm out, I don't want to do this anymore, you know. So you guys have to have a little empathy up there for training and understanding, obviously, too, so...
One, and we always take into consideration intent as well, right? We imagine that the pilot's goal is to fly safely and land safely and go home safely at the end of the night. I don't think anybody's intent is to turn early right into another airplane.
Right.
And dangerous situations will happen. Mistakes will happen. We learn from them and we try to catch them as early as possible and maintain that level of safety for them. But the fact of the matter is our archers might be going 60 knots. And at these bigger airports, they're going much faster.
Yeah,
The rate of closing speed and they're not instructing. So it is a little bit different in the pilot that you're talking to and the response that you expect.
Today's November 4th that we're recording this. And we're on the 35th day of the shutdown. The government shutdown.
Yes.
How's everyone handling it up there? And now you can speak on it in terms from the union side.
Yeah. So everything I'll say with the shutdown is definitely my opinion, not that of the FAA or even NACA Nationals. But I don't think it's a secret that it's been rough. It's been stressful. Post COVID at Grand Forks, we went 2 years almost without any trainees at all. We struggled to get people, and last year we got two trainees that are luckily almost done with training, and then we've gotten three more in the last 2 months. Two of those three are prior military, so they separated from the military and they've moved to Grand Forks, and those two will not get a paycheck until the end of the shutdown. So it is really hard. It's really hard to go through that and to keep that encouragement to the trainees. The trainees nationwide are trying so hard. This is the first shutdown that they've continued with training, which is great that they're not suspending it. But it does add a level of stress to the training experience, which is already, in my opinion, the most stressful part of the job.
Yeah.
But overall, the support that we've gotten from the university, from the airport, from private entities, even the words of encouragement, all of the things, it really helps us. And I don't think I'm out of line in speaking that our focus it really is on the fact that the pilots and the passengers did nothing to cause this issue, and we're not here to punish them for it either.
Yeah, I mean, that's understandable for sure. How do you guys deal with scheduling? Do you just say, write on a piece of paper, I'll take this shift. I'm sure it's more than that.
It is. scheduling is probably, like, if I had a dry erase board, I could draw it out for you, and it would still be super not fun. We have seniority based off of the day we enter the agency. And we bid days off and vacation time based on seniority order.
Okay.
We earn a certain amount of vacation leave every year, and sick leave is separate from that. And actually, last month, we bid all of our vacation leave for all of 2026.
Oh, wow.
So we already all know what days off we will have and what vacation days we will have for next year.
How does it work if someone's sick? I mean, do you have people on standby?
No.
No.
I mean, we call in overtime if there are people available for overtime. Right now for us, our controller number is 30, and we have 17 certified controllers right now. So having somebody available to call in is rare.
Yeah.
And it is what it is, but, like, there's always work to be done, right? And we could always use that body if they're available. So we do make the calls, and if they're available to come in, they'll come in. Most of us are already working the sixth day. We can't work more than that.
Oh, okay.
And we can only work the 10-hour shifts. So sometimes we just end up short on a shift. Mm-hmm. And UND's been very good about working with us on that in those situations because overall it's safety. We can't handle full volume if we can't staff all the positions in the tower.
Yep. What are some common mistakes or areas of improvement that you see during some of these training flights? I guess let's just start. What's a common mistake that, you know, you guys are like, oh, it happened again?
A common mistake probably is frequency, the wrong frequency.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of times we can tell. It's very common, right, when we split the 18-4 from 2055, and that's fine. But even throughout the day, I'm guessing maybe it's programmed into the plane one way or another, and they just get it wrong. But it is very common to have the wrong one, and it does make us like, okay, but you have the ATIS, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, that's probably the most common mistake.
Okay. One more question before we wrap up here. What's some advice you have for our students at UND in general for like the air traffic control side of things?
For air traffic, I mean, man, that enhance is amazing. That's what I would do. 100%. I spoke to SATCA recently and told them that's the way I would go. The enhanced CTI program, you go through the air traffic course for tower.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end of the course, you take an exam, and on completion, you get placed at a facility.
So you don't have to go to Oklahoma City then?
Correct.
For that training?
Correct.
Oh, okay.
And you don't have to wait. So you don't have to put in an application and wait for human resources to pick up that application and then get you a slot at the academy. Because one of the issues we run into is only the classes can only be so big at the academy.
Mm-hmm.
So this enables us to hire more people at a higher rate because they can skip that part and go directly to a facility.
Take out the middleman.
Yes.
Basically. Sarah Semek, JT, thank you for coming in and talking with us today.
Thanks for having me.